because our wise man in government didn't know anything better to do than to shut down small businesses.
Welcome to the show that the fact checkers warned you about. The one that debunks the mainstream narrative and gives you high signal, actionable content that helps you navigate the cloud world. It's Bomb Thrower TV with your host, Mark Jeftovic.
So I have with me the one, the only Mark Faber, Gloom Boom Doom, and a man who certainly needs no introduction for most of us. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things, but I want to start with, what is the definition of a recession these days? Because I've been told by my betters that two consecutive quarters of negative GDP negative GDP growth no longer means recession. I mean, Paul Krugman said it isn't so.
Well, this is a good question, because in a monetary inflationary environment, a lot of economic facts are hidden because of the money printing. So we have to analyze very clearly, you know, how do we define recession, what is a depression? Because some people are obviously in depression and not in recession around the world. And then we have to define different countries around the world. They move in different cycles, because if you are an oil consumer, like most European countries are oil consumers and not producers, when oil prices go up, it's like an additional tax on them. Unless you print money and the government hands out money to people so they can kind of hide the fact that the oil tax goes up. But what I wanted to say is that if you're an oil producer, say one of the Middle Eastern oil producers, and Middle Eastern countries have essentially two components to their income. One is investment income on the portfolios that they manage, and two, the oil revenues, say Qatar, Abu Dhabi, the Emirates, in other words, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, say 90% of the non-investment income would be oil income. So when the oil price goes up, their GDP goes up. When the oil price goes down, the GDP goes down. It's as simple as that. Whereas in oil-consuming countries, when oil prices go up, it has a negative impact. But the impact is not terribly high, because oil consumption in, say, a modern economy is maximum, say, 6% of GDP. So if oil prices go up, the 6% may become 7-8% of GDP. It's not a huge thing, but nonetheless, it has an impact. But of course, if food prices go up, it begins to have an impact. Not if you're Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates and one of the Fed members that have high salaries.
Yes.
Because let's say for wealthy people, if they earn $1 million a year, then how much do they spend on food? They may have to spend more on drugs and other stuff, but on food itself, it's a very small amount, because well-to-do people don't eat in proportion to their income. There's a limit how many steaks you can have a day and how much you can eat. And even the quality, you can have better wines or lower quality wines, because as you know, wealthy people, they are not necessarily the most generous people. So they're not necessarily the ones that drink the most expensive wines and so forth. So, but on poor people, obviously, if you have an income and on a poor family, maybe food is like 30, 40% of their income, depending if they have children. So when you ask me about are we in a recession or not, you see, every household has a different economy from each other, because let's say you are single, you can easily cut down on food expenditures. But if you have three small children, it's more difficult. They need to be fed. And if you have another three dogs and four cats and so forth, so each household has a different demand curve for all kinds of services, including medical services and so forth and so on. But I'd say that most households around the world have today a lower inflation-adjusted income than before 2019. Not only because of COVID, but part of the reason is COVID, because our wise men in governments didn't know anything better to do than to shut down small businesses. And this is something for me that is mind-boggling, that precisely in our so-called free democracies that are supposed to guarantee freedom, is in the US Constitution, the right to life and the right to freedom and property and so forth, that precisely in our democracies, we have the worst dictators, despots, like a Trudeau in Canada, a completely useless character. And the others in Europe are not much better. They're not much better. So this is the sad reality. Maybe it's because we had a society that became completely complacent or became completely politically uninterested. You know, they say, whenever we vote Democrats or Republican, the outcome is the same kind of quality. They all cheat, they all corrupt, they all promise stuff and don't keep their promises. So what can we do? I think this is kind of a complete political disinterest. And I grew up and my friends were affluent families and so forth in Switzerland, and none of them is politically involved in any way. But they live in Switzerland. Who they would have an interest? I don't live in Switzerland. I live here in Thailand. And in Thailand, it's very simple for me. I live under a military government. But the military government of Thailand is much freer than all these Western democratically elected officials.
Which do you think is a stronger sort of popular force right now? The widespread political apathy that you're talking about that we see in low voter turnouts, or everything for the people who are politically engaged, everything is polarized, everything is politicized, whether you wear a mask or get the vaccine or believe in climate change, it all comes down to your politics. And sometimes I think that's what's driving most of the political change these days. But then when you think about what you were just talking about, there's also this massive tuning out of attunement, like people just don't care anymore because they don't see the difference between one or the other.
Well, both exist in the sense that among political parties, it's all very politicized. That I agree with you. But if you look at Washington, D.C., they are two parties, and there's a cookie jar, and each party is interested to get as much out of the cookie jar as they can. So in order to get that money, a party will say have a program like a stimulus package. And then the other party says, yeah, well, we don't like it and this and that, until they also get their share out of this cookie jar. And as a result of that, the government expenditures are essentially out of control, not just in the US, but everywhere in the Western world. There, I have to say that in emerging economies, the stimulus packages were much smaller relative to the economy. And people have really suffered. I mean, there's no question. If you look at Thailand, at the economy, okay, as I said, the government can show that the economy is kind of, you know, growing moderately. But if you look around the city, you can clearly see that there has been a massive slowdown in economic activity for the last 3 years. The number of shops that have closed down, the number of restaurants and so forth, and even the surviving restaurants are not very full.
Yeah. You were, in the latest newsletter from last month, you were talking about, you spent some time talking about the rising interest rate climate of the 70s, because now here we are today and it looks like interest rates are rising again. And the one set of numbers you threw out that kind of grabbed me on a couple of levels, you said, if an investor can buy T-bills at 10%, why buy stocks because they're doing a dividend yield of 4%? I mean, it's pretty simple math. But that leapt out at me for two reasons. One, that the risk-free rate used to be 10%, right? Do you think we'll ever get close to that? And the other one was, in those days, when people considered whether to buy equities or not, they were actually looking at the dividend yield. And nobody looks at dividend yield today. I mean, well, very rarely. It's all about the stock price has to go up. That's how you get its capital gains, not dividend yield.
Yes, well, I look at dividend yields because I feel that for the next 10 years, stocks will not do well. So maybe the one or the other stock will go up, like the meme stock, the one or the other went up. It's like if you and I go to a lottery, and there are millions and millions of people participating in the lottery, and maybe you win, and maybe I win, and maybe somebody else wins. And if somebody else wins, like just recently happened, then you can write a book. I discovered the system how to win at the lottery, and everybody will start to play the lottery. It's the same in the stock market and with meme stocks and so forth. I think for a long-term investor, and we have many studies about what works on Wall Street, you know, value, momentum stocks, dividend stocks, low P, high P, and so forth and so on. And these are models that go back for hundreds of years, and you can calculate what in general has been a good strategy. For idiots like me, it's good to buy dividend stocks in general. Now, some genius will come and say, look, yeah, maybe it's good for you, but look at Bill Gates. He had all his money in one company and he's done well. To this, I respond, yes, that's correct. That's the company he was running. You understand? Yes. But compared to Microsoft, there are hundreds of companies that were started at the time that didn't do well. You can see each time there is a boom in the share market. So you look at the late 60s, there were hundreds of aerospace companies, bowling companies. They had small business investment companies. The small business investment companies were similar to SPACs. Mm-hmm. Most of them failed in the bear market, in the 1969-70 bear market, in the 73-74 bear market. Then you look at the early 1980s, there was a personal computer stock boom. Companies like Commodore and Coleco and so forth, hundreds of small companies started to, Atari produced a personal computer. Most of them vanished or taken over. And so forth and so on. So they are, and then there was a storage company, iOmega.
Yeah.
All these companies, they vanished. So it's a lottery. You understand? You buy these stocks. Yeah. But you look at technology. The big FANG-related stocks that did so well in the last few years is Facebook, Amazon, Google's, and then Apple, and Netflix. They all went public after the last technology boom in 2000, except for Amazon. Amazon went public before, and also Apple. But in general, you know, a lot of these hot stocks, you look at the, they call them the unicorns, the peloton of this world, and the beyond meat, and so forth. All these stocks, they went up first like a rocket, and afterwards they dropped 80%. And a lot of them will go bankrupt, a lot. So the response to all this is, it depends. You know, if you're young and you have a job and you earn $1 million a year and you want to take a punt and risk some of your money into a gamble, you can either go to Monte Carlo and you have some fun maybe, or you can go to a whorehouse anywhere in the world, or you can go drinking, or you can buy a lottery ticket, or you can play online betting on soccer or football or whatnot, or you can bet on stocks. But one thing I want to make very clear, the stock market was not invented. I want to repeat this. The stock market was not invented to make poor people rich. That people should realize. The stock market is a mechanism how to fleece small investors by rich investors. It's a mechanism to unload essentially unwanted securities onto an unsuspecting public. And the accomplices to that are the central banks.
So do you think there's any reconnection to the original ethos of the stock market, which is, you know, entrepreneurial companies want to raise capital and then distribute their profits to their shareholders? Is there any sort of ethos like that today in the world?
I love the expression, the entrepreneurs wanting to distribute nicely their profits. As they were charitable institutions like the Salvation Army, distribute my profits to my shareholders. I love this expression. No, I think the stock market up to a certain point fulfills a function of, say, raising money from investors. But it's been turned through money printing into a casino, which it is today. So the money raising function is this tiny, and the casino is from here. I have a 5 meter high ceiling. You can see it up there.
Oh, my word. Oh. That's quite the library you have there, too. But okay, so you're invested in dividend, mainly dividend stocks. You're still involved.
Like value in stocks.
Value stocks.
Right, here is value, but I like companies that pay a dividend that is higher than what I can get in the money market fund.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if short-term interest rates are 2% or 1.5%, in Europe, they're close to zero. If I can get the stock that pays me 4-5% dividend, I'm quite happy. For me, to earn 4-5% per annum consistently every year is enough. If you start from the day you're born, provided you live until 100, if you earn 5%, starting with a capital of, say, 1,000 US, which your parents can give you when you're born, they may not do it, but they could. You will die very rich. $1,000 at 5% for 100 years.
Well, I did start my daughter's coffee can portfolio about a year and a half ago, and it's mostly in this pizza company here in Canada that's been around for 50 years. And during the COVID crash, they got so smashed down that their dividend was like 9% at the time. So she just owns shares in this pizza company that's paying her the dividend. And, you know, and they've never missed a payment for about 30 years. So that's how I'm starting her out.
Great, great. I hope she doesn't eat a lot of pizzas.
Now, okay, that's the equity market. In the newsletter, you also mentioned almost in passing, the bull market in bonds ended in August 2020. If the equities market is the big global casino for fleecing the public, what's the bond market and the sovereign debt market?
That is a very good question, because I remember in 1980, 81, when bond yields in the US, the Treasury went to over 15%. The peak was precisely 15.84% on the 10 years in 1981. And then at that time, people said, well, bonds, because of inflation, are a certificate of confiscation.
Yeah.
But actually, at that time, they were a very good investment because the rate of inflation then came down and so forth. But I would imagine that at this yield, especially last year when yields in Europe, there were like more than $15 trillion worth of bonds in Europe. Around the world that had a negative interest, negative.
What's that at today? I remember it's been as high as almost.
There are very few left with negative interest.
Right.
They've all, the interest has gone up massively everywhere.
Yeah.
But massively, you see, when we had the kind of rate of inflation we have today, in the 1970s, and everybody always criticizes Robert Burns. Yeah, I think he was called Arthur Burns. Yeah, Arthur Burns.
Yeah.
As a Fed chairman. But he had the Fed fund rate in 1972 at 12%. So when we had in the 70s the kind of inflation we have today, we had interest rates of above 10%. That's what I tried to explain in my newsletter. And now these clowns at the Fed, they argue about, you know, interest rates. What is the neutral rate? Powell says it's 2%. How can you have a neutral rate when inflation is between, depending how you measure it, between 7% and 12% per annum, the interest rates are 2%. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, wouldn't neutral be like at least like dead on equal to inflation? That would be neutral?
Neutral is above inflation.
Okay. So it's got to be even higher. And do you even believe the CPI numbers, or would you be more in line with, like, you know, John Williams at Shadow Stats, who says it's got to be north of 17 right now?
As I said, it depends for whom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, my personal rate of inflation has been low for the last 2-3 years. Because the price of cigarettes hasn't gone up yet in Thailand. And the price of beer hasn't gone up yet. And I found suppliers, I suppose they smuggle in the cigarettes where the price is lower. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, and my wife always bitches about prices, but I tell her, I give you so much money. And the prices that go up is actually the prices for food. But of all the money that I give you, you spend maybe 5-10% on food and no more. So my inflation hasn't been high. And because there is no tourism at the moment in Thailand, or very little, the bars haven't gone up much in price. Maybe they've gone up in 3 years by 10% or so, but not much. I found some whiskey that is 10% cheaper than what I used to pay.
Ooh, deflation.
They may have overstocked. And then the tourists didn't come, so they have still inventories that they want to get rid of. So I don't know. But for sure, it will go up, for sure. I just bought 50 bottles of Chivas because I think it will go up.
And do you think the central banks of the world are in a secular interest hiking cycle, or do you think that they're near the end and they're going to have to pivot soon? One of the things you said in the newsletter last month as well, which I was kind of hit me, 50% of all market participants have never seen interest rates higher than 2.5% in their careers.
Yes, I think young people and most investors today, they started after the great financial crisis when interest rates were essentially kept artificially low by the woke central banks. And so they haven't seen really high inflation yet. I think what I described in the newsletter is this. For the near future, you have two opposing trends, okay? In general, the downward wave in interest rates that began in 1981 and ended in August 2020. And now we're in an uptrend, okay, in interest rates, long term. Interest rates move in long waves. We had a rising wave 1942 to 1981, and before we had a falling rate from essentially 1929 or 1921, depending which interest rates we discuss, because different interest rates move differently somewhat. So they move in long cycles, like we call them Kondratiev waves, like commodity cycles. They move in long cycles. And I suppose we are now in an upward wave for commodity prices and for interest rates. But within the upward wave that lasts, say, 30 years or 25 years, we can have subwaves, and we can have in this subwave a period of disinflation. In other words, we had this bout of inflation partly because of the incompetence of the Biden administration and European governments that created shortages for everything, from baby food to energy. Is all government induced. They could have produced more oil in the US. They could have given land out for leases, and they could have opened the Keystone pipeline. But no, this is all the socialists who are determined to essentially bankrupt the people. So people become dependent on the government handouts. And in order to get these handouts, they have to surrender their freedom, and then they become slaves. Has been discussed in the literature by many economists, including philosophers and writers here, is a servile state by Belloc. You can see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I have that.
That's
somewhere.
Where we're going, to the totalitarian society, where the socialists will tell you, you must take a vaccine. If you don't take your vaccine, no social security. And the people will say, great. As they did. They attacked people who didn't want to take a vaccine. That's what it how it is.
Do you
and
think...
And they applaud the crowd at the WEF in Davos, who are a mixture between Nazi, fascists, and communists.
Yeah, I say they're Marxists and Malthusians, but...
The problem is, also, free media like you never criticize these people. These government officials. I don't know what you're afraid of, but for me, this deserves a revolution against these government officials. Someone like Trudeau, he's not only incompetent, he's stupid. And he's governing people and telling them what to do. And the Canadians all applaud. And they re-elected him.
Other Canadians applaud.
Ask yourself, are the voters also dumb or what?
Do you think that this sort of environment of like woke Marxist politicians and the WEF, do you think they've achieved victory, or do you think that people are waking up and this is kind of added zenith and will kind of crumble after this?
I don't know what would be better, victory by the socialists or victory by a right-wing dictator, a fascist like Klaus Schwab. I don't know. The best is to avoid jurisdiction that will be like this, or move into a community that is very small, and countries that are disorganized, you know, Latin American countries and countries in Asia, with the exception of, say, China, the populations are so large. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to control everything. You know, Bangkok, the government in Bangkok can say something, and whether in a small village they pursue these policies, who knows?
Right.
It's a different world. The same goes for Indonesia and the Philippines and so forth. But I'm just saying... I think that we had a generation after the Second World War, the boomers, and especially their children, who became accustomed to a very good life and to having everything. And they never really thought, well, someone has to pay for it. You know, whatever the government does for you, someone is going to pay for it. And if you have, to put it simply, you can have two countries. In one country, everybody pays tax. Are the taxes fair or not? Who knows? It's difficult to determine what is just in life and what is unfair. But anyway, everybody pays tax, and the tax revenues covers the expenditures, period. So this is a relatively low inflationary environment. When the budget is balanced, or the government spending are balanced, you can have a society. We don't charge any tax at all, no tax at all. But we keep on borrowing money, and the Fed buys our government bonds. And so everything, nobody sees that the tax is being paid. But someone will pay tax for the government expenditures somewhere. It will show up in inflation. It can be inflation in real estate prices. It can be inflation in consumer prices. It can be inflation brought about by a collapse in the currency. But someone will pay for this inflation. That for sure. But the young people that were groomed in the modern monetary theory, that is nothing modern, but it's essentially based on an economic sophism. They believe that the government can pay and the rich people can pay and so on. They don't realize that if you increase the tax on the rich, and the rich are corporations, that it's not sure that corporations will pay the tax. First of all, corporations do not pay taxes. It's the people that pay the tax behind the corporations. In other words, the shareholders, the chairman, and so forth, the stockholders, and the workers. Because if a company has to pay high taxes, it will increase the prices. And then the wages will go up, and maybe the companies pay the wage, higher wages, and maybe not. And maybe they react to higher wages by hiring fewer people. So, but someone who will pay tax, not the corporations, the people behind the corporation.
Right. You made a reference to woke central bankers and like the title of, what was the title of the newsletter this month? Woke corporations love inflation or something like that. And in tomorrow's gold,
woke governments
love inflation. And in tomorrow's gold, your book, which I think I showed before we rolled, but here it is now from 2002. You talked about how crowd psychology requires a low level of intellect so that everything, so like the lowest common denominator can, because it has to be dumbed down. And how, like, would you consider like what we call woke capitalism today? Like, is it possibly the dumbest, lowest common denominator, or is there still some place we can go from here?
Well, I think that capitalism has been hijacked. And we have, starting essentially with the foundation of the central bank in America, the Federal Reserve, in 1913, introduced more and more government within the economic sphere, not just in America, but in Western Europe. But as you know, nowadays, there's not much difference between Europe and the US. The Europeans are probably more leftist and more woke than the US, but is similar. Anyway, in the 19th century, the central government, the federal government in the US, spent approximately 3% of GDP. Nowadays, the entire government, state, local, municipal, and federal, is around 42-45%.
Jesus.
Nobody knows exactly, because there's a lot of programs that are not official in the statistics, but basically they are government expenditures or related to government expenditures. And in Europe, in most countries, around 50% of the economy is the government. So what you have is the government. First, the economy is this size, and the government is small, and the private sector is big. Now, the government is an important part in the economy, and the government is like a cancer. It is growth inhibiting. It is not growth enhancing. That's the big misconception that economies make. They think that government spending stimulates the economy. Nothing could be more untrue. It's private investment that stimulates the economy. And we also have to discuss here, the American view is the Keynesian view. You need the government to spend because private individuals save some money. So that saving per annum is then a deficiency of economic stimulus for the economy. when in fact that private saving is very important for capital spending, because these are the savings that we talked about in the stock market before that need to be allocated for the building of bridges and tunnels and electricity and telephone companies and so forth and so on, and for the police and so forth. So we have in America and among the Keynesian the view that you need more and more government spending. So you have a COVID, more government spending. You have inflation, the dumb governments. You know what the reaction is? We have to give people subsidies so they don't suffer from inflation. But government spending is inflationary. So they want to fight inflation by inflating the system even more. I tell you, I mean, most people no longer quote Milton Friedman, but basically, I recommend to your viewers to go to the YouTube. You can watch all his speeches in the 70s. And they're very refreshing because he says the government should get out of the economy. But this is not what they're doing. They're getting into the economy more and more, micromanaging. First, they create a mess, okay? Like this baby formula food shortage. I never knew that such a thing existed in Asia. And I grew up with just milk. And I don't know, potatoes in the soup. But nowadays, they have these baby formulas, this poison anyway. It's very unhealthy. It's because it's made by healthcare companies. They want to poison the children. It's obvious. Anyway, then they have this shortage that was created by government officials, by the FDA, okay? Then they come and solve it partially by sending some planes from Switzerland, from Nestle, to the US. These planes are then received by Jill Biden, who proudly at the airport says, look, we're solving the crisis. This is precisely how governments operate. They create a mess, like in the urban centers of Baltimore, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Detroit, Chicago. The crime wave is up there. Why? It's government created. It's not somebody else. The government created it because they caved in to the idiots who support the BLM. And I'm sure among your viewers, a lot of people say, oh, the BLM is great. No. The BLM has only destroyed, never built the bridge, never done anything positive. They looted shares, shops, and so forth. But the people like Soros, they support these people. The US and Western Europe deservedly will go under because they commit suicide. They're crazy, in my opinion. They should read The Republic by Plato. He wrote 2,500 years ago that the mob rule doesn't work. The framers of the Constitution in the US, they didn't have in mind at all that everybody should vote. No, they thought an elite, Jefferson, he founded an elite school, a university, because he thought the people that will go and get educated in that university will be good to run the government. But if you have everybody voting, and look how many immigrants come in from all over the world into the US, they have no idea. They come from Venezuela, they come from Brazil. They come from failed states all over the Middle East and North Africa. They want to install in the US the failed states they came from.
It's almost
that's what they want.
It's almost similar to like when a bunch of left-wing people flee California to Texas, and then they vote in a bunch of left-wing politicians in Texas.
Absolutely.
In California.
If I were Texas, I would kick them out. I wouldn't allow them to come. If I were Florida, I wouldn't allow the... I would see...
Keep the New Yorkers out?
Here, you live by our rules, but you don't vote in our local elections, period.
Mm. Yeah.
As simple as that. But in Switzerland, we have also a socialist government. And that's why I say, I don't understand. All my friends are wealthy people. They don't fight them.
Yeah.
I don't live in Switzerland. I have no reason, but I fought. I debated these socialists. I told them what I thought of them.
You, one of the things I'll link to in the show notes, you mentioned Milton Friedman on YouTube, and you cited in the last newsletter specifically the myths that conceal reality. So I'll link to that one. I won't keep you much longer, but in all this environment that we're talking about, what are the safe havens? And I know you like gold, you like silver, platinum.
A safe haven is a good beer and a good whiskey. That's the safe haven for now. But I tell you, when I grew up in the 50s, my grandparents says you have to save 10% of your income and put every month a little bit on your saving account in the bank and so on. And that was a safe place as long as the banks were safe and as long as there was no inflation. Once interest rates were lower than the rate of inflation, it was not a safe haven anymore. And when I mentioned this to people who interviewed me in Europe and in the US, that say a decent fellow, he's a, I don't know, a small artisan, or has a shop, a grocery store, or he's a doctor or a dentist and so forth. And he puts his money on deposit and he gets a lower rate of interest than the rate of inflation. They said, yeah, but he can buy stocks. He can buy stocks. But yes, he can buy stocks. But I want to tell you, I have the precise statistics. They are published by Fidelity and by Dalbar. We can measure how much individuals earn on their stock portfolios. The rate of return is about 2% per annum because they buy at the wrong time and sell at the wrong time.
Yeah.
The wrong stuff. I have a book here, why most investors are mostly wrong most of the time. And he was quite a famous guy in the 70s. And then there's the cost of investing that people don't see. They think they go on Robin Hood. They think they go and trade for free on other platforms. They're dreaming. Of course, there's the cost. They just don't see it. Why do people pay so much money for the order flow?
Yeah.
Why?
It's the same as your analogy with the
new investors mostly are inexperienced and they don't realize that it's a very vicious game. The stock market, the investment world. Wall Street is almost as bad as Washington, D.C.
Hmm. Yeah, it was similar to your analogy.
And I worked for Wall Street for more than 20 years. I was an employee in two investment banks. And so I see it a little bit. But the Swiss banks are no better and other financial institutions are no better either.
I gotta ask because I'm so
a safe haven, I tell you, but again, I have to qualify the statement. I think if you own some physical gold, it's quite a good investment long term as an insurance. But there are some conditions under which you should own it. First of all, as you know, although the Constitution in the U.S. In grand letters proclaims liberty and freedom of liberty and life and property, freedom of property. They took the gold away in 33.
Yeah.
Under Mr. Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And well, that can happen again because what I see is the expropriation of the and seizure of assets of Russian oligarchs. Everybody says, okay, we are not Russian, we don't care. But you understand, you start with one group of people. Hitler did that. He started with one group, then he went from one group to another until he got everybody.
Well, I'm here in Canada, and we had bank accounts seized in earlier just this year for funding the trucker protest.
Yes, but I'm surprised that the not whole of Canada went on a strike and said, we're not taking this anymore.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed as well, but I think there is some grassroots anger building now. But this brings us to something I have to ask you about.
They should lynch Trudeau, in my opinion.
Right.
I have a friend in America. He built a replica of the guillotine, but exactly the way the guillotine was, and it functions. Originally, he built it for Hillary Clinton, but there are quite a few other candidates that are now also suitable.
Well, I've heard it said that World War III is going to be like the people versus the leaders.
Who knows? But I think Russia is not a threat to the free world. I think the politicians are a threat to the free world. And I think it's too late to do much about it because of the indifference I just mentioned.
What do you think of Bitcoin? I got to ask you because I'm so into Bitcoin. I know you've traded it on and off over the years, but it's something that can't be seized when you hold it properly.
Yes, but the government, if they want, they can make it difficult for you to make payments with Bitcoins and so forth. But I agree with you, it's probably relatively difficult to seize. Or say, if I have 10 kilos of gold in Switzerland and I live in Thailand, I want to bring them here, then, when I go through custom in Switzerland, they'll arrest me. Now, maybe I can give it to a gold dealer in Switzerland who has an account with a bank there and he pays me out in Thailand, maybe.
Yeah,
but that will happen. But as I said, you have to store some gold where you live. In other words, you said, what is a safe haven? I tell you what is a safe haven is basically to go and live in a small village somewhere, but not as a millionaire and billionaire. Don't arrive there with your helicopter and private plane and seven girlfriends, and your Cadillac, a stretch limousine, and so forth. Go there as a simple citizen. Nobody will ask, is he rich, poor? Live like a simple man. That is the best protection for you. And keep your gold in your garden. And have enough water. You have to live near a river or on a river. Like I live on a river here, and you have to have enough surroundings that you can plant your potato and wheat and corn and keep three cows, whereby the socialists will come and say, you're not allowed to keep the three cows. We want them for us.
Yeah.
Has all happened, but nobody pays attention. Just read the history of the Bolsheviks in Russia, who were behind, who financed the communists, the Bolsheviks, who they were, who were in the secret service and sent and tortured people in the concentration camps. in the Gulag. It's interesting history. Hitler, yeah, he didn't invent anything. He just copied what the Bolsheviks had done.
Yeah, there's a couple of good books. Anthony C. Sutton put the Wall Street in the Bolshevik Revolution, and I have it around here somewhere. And
yeah, sure. Solzhenitsyn also
wrote it.
Anyway, I can tell you, because I grew up in the 50s, we went already in 1955 to Yugoslavia. And then in the 60s, when I was racing for the Swiss team, we went frequently to Eastern Europe for races. I can tell you, and then I went to all the communist countries in Asia, of course. Anyone who's traveled to communist socialist countries before they opened up has seen the misery under which people lived. They would never, people who lived in Vietnam, in China, Russia, they will never want to the socialist communist back. Only in spoiled societies where brain damaged academics at universities are jealous of business people who have little education. That's about essentially this whole moral thing, a jealousy by these academics who can't stand that someone without an education becomes a billionaire because he invested in bitcoins or invested in a tech company and so forth. They think we academics, we know everything better and so forth. And they are great academics, but they shut them down. They kick them out.
Right.
That's the way it is. And so I can't be very optimistic about financial assets in this environment. But I say to myself, let's say we have a bull market. Stocks go up, everything goes up by 100%, and I'm up by only 50%. Then I have lost out, relatively speaking, to the rest. If everything collapses and everything drops 60% and I'm only down 10, 20%, then I'm relatively richer. That's the way I look at the world.
Okay.
I hope I only be down 20%, but I think we'll all be down. We'll all have less freedom. This COVID business is a massive scam to curtail the freedom of people. Now they're going to invent the monkeypox, whatever it is, and they will continue to restrict your freedom more and more and more, and then we'll go into the totalitarian state where one guy, usually out of democracies, evil people will come up. So let's be very optimistic.
Well, you know, I try to be, when I look at that kind of a picture, I don't disagree, but I just think it can't last. So I hope it doesn't. And it's actually been a thrill to meet you finally after all these years. And how do people keep up with you?
I agree, it won't last. But in the Soviet Union, it lasted from 1918 to 1989. So if you happen to be born in 1917, it wasn't a great time.
I take solace in that we live in a world where everything is moving quicker. So an 80-year totalitarian regime could be compressed into maybe a decade. And maybe Correct. We're halfway through that Correct. Decade.
Yes, I agree.
All right. How do people keep track of your stuff?
Well, I have a website, www.gloomboomdoom.com.
Great.
And there, if someone wants to subscribe, you can subscribe. I have two reports. One is a bit more geared towards institutions.
Yeah.
And, more difficult to read. And another one is more for kind of not necessarily retail, but more action oriented.
Yeah, I've been a
the other one is a more philosophical observation.
Yeah, I subscribe to that one. I have for a long, long time. I love it. It's such a great read every month. So,
well, thank you very much.
It's great to
meet you. I hope you haven't lost too much money.
No. I lose my own money. I don't, you haven't lost me any. So, all right. Well, have a great rest of your
night.
Okay,
nice talking to you.
You as well.
And apologies for having been late.
It's not a problem. It all worked out.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Good night.